Hello, welcome to episode 130 of the Cricket Her Weekly. We have just finished watching the final round of matches in the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy, and Sid is in a monumental sulk because Vipers have lost to the Diamonds, Sid. So where does that leave us in terms of the final standings?
Well, congratulations to the Diamonds, first of all. Now, the Diamonds were much better on the day, really, weren't they? And we've just seen Lauren Winfield-Hill score a century, Bess Heath, who I think is definitely a future England player as well. She made a half century. The Diamonds did look to be in a little bit of trouble, didn't they? Just possibly, at the sort of halfway point, but those two really took it away. And, congratulations to the Diamonds. They're on their way to Lords, and we'll be looking forward to watching them at Lords next weekend. So they've gone straight through to the final. Vipers will be taking a trip to Beckenham to play against South East Stars, assuming they win their game. Their game isn't quite over, but they're almost certainly going to win it. The Vipers need to get over another hurdle in order to make that final, and it's the first time they've lost this year, I think. But, at the end of the day, definitely the Diamonds were just looked really classy, and I just get this inkling that it could be their year, especially as the Vipers have lost a lot of players to England. England allowed Maya Boucher to come back to get today. She presumably won't play for England tomorrow, but there's several other players, in that England squad, and, there comes a point at which Vipers just don't have quite enough depth, even though they've probably got more depth than anybody else. It wasn't quite enough today. Congratulations to the Diamonds.
Well, I was going to come to that because Beth on Twitter actually messaged us this week and said, "Hi, been following you on Twitter and just started listening to the podcast. Love what you're doing." Thanks, Beth. That's really kind. And she says, "How do you predict Southern Vipers are going to do in the Hayhoe-Flint Trophy with Bell, etc., playing for England?" So I guess building on the back of that loss today, and you've just been saying that part of that comes down to losing a lot of their players to England, can they go on from here and win their third successive Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy title, Sid?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely can do it. I think the Stars game is actually going to be a really good game. The Stars are also obviously missing players. We've seen that Alice Capsey will be, with the England squad for the ODIs. I mean, well, she had kind of made herself undroppable. We're going to come back to that a little bit later. But they're also, Freya Davis is staying with England.
ADR.
And yeah, so I think it's going to be a really good game. Possibly actually may well be a better game than the final. Lords does have a little bit of a reputation for sometimes producing slightly damp squib finals, doesn't it? I'm definitely looking forward to that game. However, if I was Vipers, I can definitely see why I'd want to kind of bypass that and go straight to the final, because I think that is going to be a real test for them. On their day, the Stars have got some great young players, and they could make life very difficult for the Vipers. I think that if I was betting on it, don't bet, kids. But if I was, I'd probably still think the Vipers will get to the final. But I think that they will struggle in the final, given that they're likely to be missing all those England players, you'd think. I suppose it's possible that England release anyone that doesn't play in the final ODI against India, and that they do get maybe a couple of players back. But, I mean, if Diamonds can kind of reproduce the kind of performance that they did today, which was, don't forget, it was based on actually a good performance of the ball as well. They've got some key strike bowlers, and when you've got, like, Katie Levick able to come in and take wickets and the other people backing her up, I think that Diamonds are just going to be a little bit strong for Vipers, given that how much that they've been weakened by those England selections.
I think that's really interesting. We've seen that Bryony Smith was one of the players who was released by England to... she's been omitted from the ODI squad rather than released. But Stars have benefited from that today because she scored 100 for them, and good for her. It is an open question as to, players like Lauren Bell and Charlie Dean are probably quite likely, you'd think, to play in every match of the three ODI series against India this week. Should they then be allowed to go on and play in the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy final, which is the day after the final ODI, and is also the very end of the season? I personally think that they should, because I think that that will make it a better final, but the ECB may not agree with me. Now, Sid, we have had some other big news in relation to the regional structure this week that relates to Lightning, haven't we?
We have. Lightning are going to be travelling lightning quick up to knots. So essentially, what's happened is the ECB have kind of reallocated the Lightning franchise. It's now going to be directly under the control of the people at Notts, and it's going to be part of the sort of the Notts setup. We're guessing, that there's going to be a new name and things as well. What do you make of it, Raf? I mean, because Lightning's always has, as you tweeted, Lightning's always been slightly an anomaly within the entire regional structure because it's the one that wasn't kind of built out of an existing men's professional cricket setup.
Yeah, well, if you remember, let's take everyone back to 2015 when they announced that they were bringing in the Kia Super League in the 2016 season, and Claire Connor's original remit or original kind of bid for people to host or groups of conglomerates, amalgamations of different types of people to bid to host a KSL franchise team. That was originally meant to be quite open, and she said, we envisaged universities or other groups applying. It was a very open call. But what ultimately happened was that all of the KSL teams, except for Loughborough Lightning, went to existing first class men's counties because it's very difficult for anyone else to have the infrastructure to run a team. And now then the Loughborough obviously had an advantage being a university where the university where the ECB rather have their high performance centre. So they had a brilliant pitch, brilliant facilities, a brilliantly kind of maintained wicket, everything like that that they needed to in order to put in a strong bid and to be one of the successful six hosts as it was then for the Kia Super League. And then they've kind of then gone on and leveraged that success to be able to become one of the hosts of the new eight regions. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey, but I think what we're seeing now is that women's cricket at that domestic level in England is becoming more professional, and it's to some extent outgrowing what Loughborough University can offer. And that was sort of recognised in the press release. It's a bit sad in a way because I know we've got happy memories and other people have got happy memories of sitting at that pitch at Hazelgrave and sitting in deck chairs around the edge and it really having that kind of community feel and that real sense of being right near to the players. That's something that's dying out, even in domestic women's cricket now. You don't get that sense because everything's being played at first-class professional grounds, and it's something that we called for a long time, because we wanted there to be those better pitches, didn't we? And we wanted there to be the chance for women's players to be, going out and hitting big hundreds on at grounds like the Aegeus Bowl. But the trade-off there is that you then outgrow your Hazelgraves and your smaller grounds, your more kind of community feel grounds, and that's quite difficult and that's quite sad in some ways. I think it makes sense. I'm just a little bit confused about the timing. It just seems a really odd time to announce this, right before the end of the season when you already had one final round of regional fixtures left to play. So how odd must it have been for all of the Lightning staff and everyone involved in Lightning to be going out and playing that final match today as Lightning, with everyone knowing, oh well, in a few weeks' time you won't exist. I think that was just a bit of an odd time to announce it. Why not wait until the end of the season? So I'm just slightly confused by that. But anyway, that's the decision that's been made. So let's talk a little bit about the name, because there's been a little bit of speculation about that on Twitter. Will they remain Lightning? And I think my favourite comment was Jules Randall, who said that because it's the men are the Notts Outlaws, it should be the Maid Marians. What do you make of that one, Sid?
Well, whatever they choose, they are going to have to almost certainly choose something different. And I'm afraid, sorry guys out there, they're almost certainly going to wind up with different uniforms as well. Why? Because the Lightning kind of brand is across all of Loughborough's sport. They've also got a professional netball team that's in the top tier of the professional netball in this country, and they've got all sorts of other much more university-tied sports teams, which have exactly the same branding, exactly the same purple kit with the V, and they're all called Lightning. So I think that even if the ECB were to want to continue with the name, I suspect that Loughborough would just say no. We own a trademark on that. It's our brand. It belongs to us. You can't do that. But I think probably that the ECB will want to try and have a little bit of a new start, and to to give them a new name. And Notts will want that as well, because they'll want to kind of make
ownership.
Yeah, exactly. They want to show people that something different's going on, and that could be good for the team as well. The team's actually slightly underperformed over the last couple of years, and the team that we should say that. the players and the people at Lightning have been aware for some time that this was coming. So this is not a piece of news that's come as a shock to the players at Lightning. And, you know, but they haven't really been performing at the top of their games necessarily. We've, you know, it's like you look at this, there's lots of good players there, but they haven't been able to quite put it all together. This is a chance to kind of rebuild, even if they don't have to, like, you know, rebuild the team itself. It's a chance to just go somewhere different, be a different name, and that alone can make a big difference. So, you know, looking forward to seeing them and looking forward to finding out what Notts decide to call them next year.
I've got a radical suggestion, Sid, for what they should be called.
Okay.
The Trent Rockets.
Good plan, Raf. Yeah.
You know why I'm saying that, don't you? It's because all along it's been absolutely bonkers that the ECB launched a rebrand of the women's domestic structure at exactly the same time as they launched 100, and they didn't give them the same names. In fact, I believe they deliberately said you can't have the same names. Not only that, you can't have the same colour kit. So you've got people who are in Vipers Orange for half of the season who then have to switch to being in Western Storm Green for the rest of the season, because that's the Southern Brave allocated colour, and are just utterly confused. I went into the shop at the Aegeus Bowl last weekend and wandered round going, why have they got Western Storm kit in here? And then obviously realised that I was being a dimwit and that it was Southern Brave colours. But it, you know, just doesn't make sense. You're trying to attract fans, you're trying to create these loyalties to these teams, and so you've duplicated,
you're all that marketing investment in, and then you're going, well, we're going to throw it away, apart from for the sort of 6 weeks of the hundreds on, and you know, it does feel like the regional teams in particular are fighting an uphill battle with this. But I guess, you know, it's a decision that's been taken, and, you know, I think they're almost certainly not going to change their minds now. So,
well, that's a shame. Let's talk about England, because we have seen the conclusion of the England v India T20 series this week. Since we last recorded the video, two more T20s have been played. England lost the one at Derby. They were a bit rubbish, and then they, you know, totally turned it around and in the course of 2 days, and then won the series decider at Bristol. It's been a slightly odd series, and it does feel like, because we talked about these September series in last week's episode, it feels like that that kind of decision at the toss has almost been the really key thing, in terms of, it feels like it makes such a difference to the team that gets to bowl first then wins the match, because of the way that the conditions then change as the match goes on into the cooler September evening. And interestingly, England won the toss in all three of those games, but for reasons best known to herself, Amy Jones decided that for the second game, England should opt to bat first. For the other two, they made the right call. They won both of them by a fair margin. So, yeah, interesting series. What have you made of it all, Sid?
Well, yeah, the conditions definitely have played a part, haven't they? At Derby, the things got really damp at the end. There was a lot of dew around. And then that wasn't quite the same at Bristol, but at Bristol it did get really chilly by the end. I mean, when we went out at the end of the game, you know, into the outside bit, out of the press box, suddenly, you know, you're like, I should have brought a coat with me here. And I think a few of the players on the field would have been feeling that. You know, it is difficult to field a ball. It just makes it that little bit harder to field a ball. It's difficult to control it if you're a spinner. You know, your fingers aren't operating at quite the same level that they are, and these things do make a difference for elite athletes. You know, it makes a difference whether, you know, your fingers are at the optimal temperature, or whether if they're a little bit cold, that's, you know, the number of revolutions you're going to get on the ball and things like that. So yeah, I mean, we it's exactly what we talked about last weekend, basically. You know, I wouldn't have held these series in September and had evening games. I think that we really need to be looking at trying to play these games during the daytime, because the weather in the daytime has been fine. I mean, it's been lovely today. We've seen that, you know, we've seen on the live stream, we had lovely weather up in Yorkshire as well. You know, and hopefully we'll get some lovely weather for an ODI down at the seaside in Hove tomorrow. But by the time it gets into the evenings in September, it just doesn't really work, unfortunately.
Okay, now we did have another question from Beth on Twitter, who says, Danny Wyatt, how secure is her place in the England team? She seems a bit inconsistent. What do all your lovely stats tell you, Sid? I believe that's a reference to your lovely stats.
Well, I think the key stat that England are looking at, let's just talk about T20 cricket for the moment. The key stat that England are looking at with all their T20 players at the moment is their strike rate. So they're just going, are they going to chew up a load of balls? You know, are they going to risk doing something, the sort of thing that Tammy Beaumont did occasionally, which is wind up being, you know, 5 off 20 balls and then, you know, getting out at that point and you've left a load of balls on the table. That's what England don't want want to happen. Danny White's not doing that. She's striking at 100 right from the off, and then she's either pushing on or she's getting out. So England are going to be happy with that in the T20 game. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the ODI selections, though. Danny White has... I mean, it wouldn't have been a huge surprise if Danny White had been released from the ODI squad, would it? Especially with the form that Capsey was in. You might say, well, we're going to play Capsey, therefore we'll release White. But she's been retained for that squad, which means there's a possibility that she's going to play. But do we think that she will? That's actually... Interestingly, obviously England are going to be without Nat Siver, and they're going to be without Heather Knight, but there's actually still some batting dilemmas there, isn't there? Because Emma Lamb's coming back, there's Tammy Beaumont, who obviously provides that kind of backbone role that England won't have. So I think that there could be definitely arguments going, well, we need Tammy in the team because she's the one that, in an ODI situation, Tammy's 70 off... 80 balls, that is possibly what you want in order to kind of back up everyone else, especially if you've got loads of other batters that are going to go at 90 miles an hour and then potentially get out quite quickly. What do you think they might do with those dilemmas? Do you think that Tammy will play? Do you think that Waggy will play?
Oh, well, of course Tammy Beaumont's going to play. She's our best batter in ODI cricket. I don't really think that's a question. I think it's fairly obvious that they want and they expect Beaumont and Lamb to be the opening pair in ODIs to come. That's the decision that I think that has kind of already been made earlier in the summer. I guess the question then is whether you play Danny Wyatt further down the order. We know that she wants to be opening for England in all formats, but she's also accepted that because of those decisions that have been made about the opening pair, actually her natural role then in this format becomes coming in at 6 or 7 behind now players like Alice Capsey, who I think, as you said earlier in the episode, has basically, because of the way that she's batted in the T20s against India, has actually made herself undroppable. She did also tweet ahead of the ODI squad being released saying on to the ODIs, she kind of gave it away a bit, but I don't really think that there was any doubt on the other hand, so she probably didn't necessarily give it away. It was her batting that gave it away, because you can't drop her when she's in this kind of form. Anyway, we've given people plenty of Alice Capsey bingo points there. I think it's possible that they will play Wyatt, but she's obviously going to have that kind of late middle order role instead. What I think is really interesting is that despite having brought Tammy Beaumont back, they've made Amy Jones the captain for the ODIs as well. And they've obviously only just communicated this decision to Amy Jones, because she was specifically asked in a press conference by me earlier in the week, because she was talking about having been captain in the T20s, and she sort of said, oh, actually the players have made it really easy for me, because they've kind of, she didn't say they've been captaining themselves, but she said, they're basically, especially the bowlers, have been kind of, really stepping up and doing their own thing and helping set their fields and really helping me out. And partly because, Jones is kind of behind the stumps at one end, and then people are having to have conversations at the other end. And that's quite difficult, unless Amy Jones wants to spend her entire life running 22 yards up and down. So I said, oh, well, given that you're enjoying it, are you putting your hat in the ring to be the ODI captain then? And she was like, no. So obviously at that point, that conversation hadn't been had with her. She did kind of say, oh, well, obviously it's a thing that's difficult to turn down if it's offered to you. But, we know that she's kind of said that she's expressed that she's quite a quiet person and she doesn't necessarily fit naturally into that captaincy role. But they've given it to her anyway. They've effectively opted for that continuity over having Beaumont do it, despite the fact that Beaumont's got much more recent captaincy experience. And I think probably does, as a person, as a personality, fit more naturally into that leadership capacity. I suppose it's possible that they asked Tammy and she said no, but I don't think it's very likely. I think that that Lisa Kightley and the kind of management team have sat down and gone, okay, well, we think it's better for England to have the same captain. But I think that that's it's a big call, and it's interesting. Now, from captain to coach, Sid, because we now know that Charlotte Edwards is not going to be the next England coach. Why? She's not applying, that's why. She was actually asked this on air during the final T20 at Bristol, and she just came right out and said, no, I'm not applying. I think she probably got fed up of people asking her, including me a couple of weeks ago during the 100, and just decided to kind of shut the question down And her reason is, as you know, people have kind of suggested, might well be her reason is that she wants to go out to the WBBL and do the head coach role at Sixers and get that experience under her belt. And then, you know, yes, she does want to coach England one day, but she's decided this isn't the right time. Are you surprised by that, Sid?
No, I'm not surprised. And the reason I'm not surprised is because I you know Charlotte Edwards reasonably well. You know, having interacted with her many times over the past few years, and she's someone that's always happy to stop and talk. And she's a very sensible woman. And I think that, you know, she's realised what others of us could see as well, that it wasn't the right time. Why wasn't it the right time? Well, partly simply because Heather Knight had said it might not be the right time. And if the England captain's going, well, I don't know if it's the right time for this person, then you already know that there's potentially something set up. There's a conflict set up where, you know, if Charlotte Edwards was appointed and Heather Knight has gone, well, I'm not sure it's the right time, then clearly the first thing that all the media are going to ask is, well, Heather, you said it wasn't the right time for Charlotte Edwards to be coach. She is the coach. What now? That was obviously so Heather Knight, in a way, is kind of, you know, if what Heather Knight was trying to do was to prevent Charlotte Edwards becoming coach, she's played a blinder there. And, you know, the other thing is that I think that Charlotte Edwards, you know, has got more that she can go forwards with these other roles. I think that she's right that doing the roles overseas will give her more experience, you know, and there's the options for other roles overseas as well. And they will, you know, put her in an even better position to apply for this job in 2 or 3 years' time when it next becomes available. And that's kind of when I would expect her to go for it.
Well, we know that the, actually, because they issued a job description this week, and they have said that it's going to run until the end of 2025, so it's the same duration that I think that Lisa Kightley's contract was as well, 3-year period, so that'll be her next opportunity.
Yeah, and you know, I guess the one thing that's going to be really interesting as well is that this does create a bit of a not ideal situation for whoever does get the job. What's going to happen here is that whoever gets the job, whatever happens, the media are going to sit there and go, well, if Charlotte Edwards was coach. So, you know, I mean, if the next coach goes out and wins the T20 World Cup and wins the 50 over World Cup and wins this and that and wins 2 Ashes tournaments, then people won't say that. But let's face it, that's unlikely. You know, we've got some great stars coming up, and there's another reason for Charlotte Edwards was told off 3 years until people like Kemp and Capsie are in their absolute pomp. What players are they going to be in 3 years' time? That's when you want to be England coach. But for the next 3 years, the media, every time England fail, are going to go, well, if Charlotte Edwards was coach, and that's going to be a tough one for the next coach to deal with, but it is just something that they're going to have to deal with professionally, unfortunately. You know, there is the media spotlight now on the role, and you know that spotlight's going to shine, and it's going to shine, and it's going to, every time it does, Charlotte Edwards will get reflected back in it.
Can I add to that, though, because I think that there's going to be a bit of pressure on Charlotte Edwards herself, actually, who is going to now be doing these other roles. We know that one of them's with the Sixers. We know she's going to carry on with the Vipers. Could well get a gig in next year's women's IPL, etc., etc., etc. There's going to be added pressure on her, I think. Now, I don't think she's somebody who shies away from pressure. I don't think it will bother her at all. But I do think that people will now be watching her. And as we know, coaching in cricket can be a bit of a fickle game. And yes, she's been incredibly successful at Vipers, partly because she's been able to shape that team, as we've talked about so many times, and had so much ability to pull the strings around that and to structure it in the way that she thinks is the best way. I don't know that she's going to have that same authority at the Sixers. I don't know if she's going to have that same ability, the access to those same strings. And she certainly is not going to have that in a women's IPL situation, because it's a very short-term thing, and it's a very different kind of, you know, you're being launched in and you're having to really grapple with something in a very short space of time. And so I do think that there is going to be a media spotlight now surrounding what she does for the next 3 years, because yes, she's been successful with the Vipers, but who's to say that she will also be successful in these other things that she does? I think she's brilliant, and I really hope she does apply for the England job in a few years' time and get it, but I'm just saying that I think that spotlight, that media pressure, does go both ways.
Okay.
Yeah. So shall we just wrap up quickly with one final piece of news that we had this week, which was the retirement of Rachel Haynes. Sid, I enjoyed your Rachel Haynes appreciation tweet very much. Would you like to repeat it for the Cricket Her Weekly viewers?
Well, it was okay. So Do I need to explain even what who Bob the Builder is? Well, Bob the Builder is a TV character in this country. I'm sure I'm sure our Australian friends and everything have seen him. And Bob the Builder is a builder who always messes everything up. And then his kind of he's got this sidekick called Wendy, who's obviously a woman, who comes along and kind of fixes everything after Bob's made a right mess of it. And I kind of pictured Rachel Haynes as a bit like Wendy. So that not necessarily that other people have kind of messed things up in quite the same way, but she's the person who steps in when things have gone wrong. And you know, fixes them. So you know, with the bats, how many times have you know Australia wound up in the last few years being like 3 or 4 down, and then Rachel Haynes has come in and got 70 off 70 balls, and you know, turned the game around and got them back into it. You know, also with the Australian captaincy, you know, that she's always been there to kind of back up Meg Lanning, and she hasn't had a big ego about it. She's not. She's obviously been quite happy to be, you know, Meg Lanning's number two, but she's taken that role, and every time she's been asked to step up, she's done exactly what's been asked of her, and then she's also been happy to step back out of the limelight again when Meg Lanning has come back. And the other thing is that has been really interesting about her career, the other tweet I did, which you know is perhaps even more important, is the way that you know, she had this sort of 4-year break in her career. So she played for Australia between 2000, she had one ODI in 2009, but basically between 2010 and 2013, and she was averaging about 30 throughout that whole point in ODIs, and then they dropped her and you know didn't bring her back until 2017. She was actually brought back basically as an understudy for the captaincy, wasn't she? She wasn't a regular member of the side at that point. She was brought back, you know, you'll be captain if Meg Lanning's unavailable, which she was for much of the World Cup in 2017. But her average since then took a huge step change, and all the time since then her average has been like close to 50. She's wound up just under 50 in the last 4 years, which is just exceptional. And you know, she's turned what had been kind of a career where you know people would be going, Rachel who? No, I don't really remember her, into someone that you know will be you know remembered as you know a really important player in the era where Australia have won all these World Cups. So you know, she just leaves on a fantastic high, and she can look back on her career with just so much satisfaction of having been you know such an important player for Australia, and you know all those medals in her trophy cabinet. You know, enjoy your retirement, Rachel.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think she talks about that there being a moment in 2015 or 2016 where she was out of the side, and there being a sliding doors moment where she actually thought about walking away from cricket altogether. Just shows the value of persistence, and that's a quality that she's had in spades. So absolutely all the best to her. The other obviously interesting thing is that she now isn't a ready-made replacement for Meg Lanning, who we know is taking an indefinite break from cricket. There was a hint in the Laura Jolly article on cricket.com.au that the players and the management knew that this was coming, and that they are already making, or have already made, plans for this particular instance in the event that Meg Lanning either doesn't come back or wants to come back in a non-leadership role. They are making plans for that. Now, there are a few plausible candidates for that captaincy, and it partly depends on how kind of short-term they're thinking. Perhaps somebody like Alyssa Healy or Beth Mooney might do it if you were thinking more short-term. You've also got Ash Gardner as a potential long-term candidate. But what I think is really interesting is that Australia are doing exactly what we said they needed to do, and they're really thinking hard about who strategically is going to make a good captain. I think the ECB could learn a few lessons from that. Shall we leave it there, Sid? Thanks for tuning in, as ever. We'll be back in a week's time. Bye for now.
Bye.